Welcome to Local Talk on KHOY Community Radio, where we explore people's stories and events in Central Iowa. Good to get together again to provide facts to our community through Zoom technology and word of mouth. Thank you for listening. I am Pat Schlarbaum, your host for the hour, with engineer Mike Murphy. And Local Talk guests are in the wings, so to speak, on Zoom with a full slate for your enjoyment and information about our fair city and beyond later in the program. The weather will be relatively warmer, with temperatures in the upper 80s today and throughout the weekend. Possible thunderstorms on Saturday and Sunday with a high of upper 80s. And thunderstorms forecast Monday and Wednesday next week. So the forecast and last night's shower will help avoiding all-out drought conditions, for sure. Let's welcome Dennis Hart, who works so wonderfully at gathering the news for this week from the pages of our local newspaper.
There was plenty of news in the Ames Tribune this past week. Let's start with last Friday, when the Trib reported that the Ames City Council had voted to fund more than $17 million of a proposed new $27 million aquatic center through general obligation bonds, without voters having a chance to weigh in. $10 million had already been fundraised for the project, and the city needs to cover the remaining $17 million through the general obligation bonds. Ames residents could force the issue onto the ballot through a bond referendum. The Trib also reported that students at Iowa's three state public universities would pay more in tuition this year. The State Board of Regents approved an increase of about $280 per student at both Iowa State University and the University of Iowa, and about $115 a student at the University of Northern Iowa. ISU President Wendy Winterstein said increased revenue from tuition is needed to maintain educational quality, and that, in her words, as state funding for Iowa State has stagnated and even declined, tuition increases have been unavoidable. There was also a report that investigations into three Marshalltown educators' alleged sexual abuse of students have elevated questions about the prevalence of sexual abuse by school staff in Iowa and what can be done to stop it. To have more than one employee charged with alleged sex crimes against students in one school district in such a short time is rare. In Marshalltown, the police chief said despite the timing, the cases there are not connected. And there was word that an Ames man charged in the fatal stabbing of his roommate in 2019 had been found guilty. A Story County jury found 57-year-old David Sean Hunter guilty of first-degree murder. The mandatory sentence for first-degree murder in Iowa is life in prison without the possibility of parole. Hunter will be sentenced September 17th. He had admitted stabbing 37-year-old Christopher Swalwell in their West Ames apartment. Hunter's attorneys argued he did it in self-defense. Saturday's Trib reported that Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds had named a new commandant for the Iowa Veterans Home after removing the facility's previous leader without explanation earlier this year. The new commandant is Matthew Peterson, who will lead the nursing facility for Iowa veterans in Marshalltown. Peterson was in the Marines for two decades. The Iowa Veterans Home was founded in 1887 and is one of the nation's biggest state-owned nursing homes for veterans, with about 500 residents and 900 employees. And in a related story, word that the man who had been fired as commandant from the Iowa Veterans Home, Timon Ogiri, had collected more than $100,000 in excess wages and benefits. A special auditor's report alleged that Ogiri had told the governor's office this year that he knew about the overpayment, but did nothing to resolve the issue. Ogiri's lawyer said Ogiri did offer to repay the money. The Trib also reported that lawyers representing Governor Reynolds had argued that the state's open meetings law is not a well-recognized public policy and thus does not give job protections to employees who fulfill public information requests. State lawyers made that assertion in asking a judge to dismiss a wrongful termination suit filed by Polly Carver Kim, the former longtime communications director for the Department of Health. And the Trib reported that a new coffee shop had opened on Stang Road in Ames. Longtime Ames coffee business Burgie's Coffee and Tea Company had opened a location in Somerset called Burgie's North, its first standalone location. Sunday's paper reported that those who have lost loved ones to the coronavirus will have an opportunity in Ames to meet others with similar grief. Mary Greeley Medical Center was set to launch a six-week COVID bereavement support group starting this past Tuesday at the Israel Family Hospice House at 400 South Dakota Avenue. The group will meet each Tuesday through September 7th to talk and help participants find support. It's open at no cost to anyone who lost a loved one to the coronavirus. There was also word about an Ames startup that diverts food waste with at-home pickup. Core Living Compost is a waste pickup service that covers all of Ames and helps divert food refuse from the stream of garbage handled at the Ames Resource Recovery Plant. Customers can sign up for weekly or biweekly pickup of their food and organic waste. They receive a 4-gallon container with a lid and a liner to store their food waste until pickup day. The goal is to make access to composting more convenient for people. The City of Ames also has a food waste diversion program. There was also a report that Story County is seeking public input to find the most pressing community needs that could be helped with available coronavirus money. The county received American Rescue Plan Act money to help recover from the economic impact of the pandemic. The county would like residents to respond to a survey that will help the Board of Supervisors decide what issues to prioritize and where to use the money. The survey is on the Story County website. And there was word that Iowa State University community members who need a place to study but who also have a child to take care of while they do it will have a space at the Parks Library on the ISU campus to try out this fall. The family-friendly room is on the lower level of the library, which will be available by reservation. A survey of ISU students who are also parents showed that about 2/3 of respondents needed more child-friendly space on campus. So what was once a group study room at the library is being transformed into one that can have 8 occupants, 2 adults and their children, at the same time. Along with technology for adult study needs, there will be a children's computer with education software on it, toys, a PlayStation, and a small table with chairs. Tuesday's Trib reported that the City of Ames was looking for input on where to put housing money that will benefit residents with low and moderate incomes. The city is in the process of reviewing the Community Development Block Grant and Home Annual Action Plan. The council will discuss the proposed plan at its regular meeting next Tuesday. About $1 million is available between the two programs, with the money designed to be used to help get rid of slums and blight. There was also word about an event that was set to take place this past Tuesday night in Ames and across the nation. It was the annual National Night Out, and the Ames Police Department was set to put on an evening of games, food, and giveaways. The event was set to be held at the Friendship Baptist Church on Mortensen Road. It's meant to strengthen neighborhood spirits and bonding between police and the community. The event was first launched nationally in 1984, and now it's estimated to reach more than 38 million people in 16,000 communities across all 50 states. There was also word about this week's ongoing Rummage Rampage in Ames. That's a community sale designed to keep reusable items out of the waste stream. It's been taking place all this week at the Ames Intermodal Facility and will continue until tomorrow at noon. Wednesday's Trib had word that a judge had rejected a motion to retry Christian Bahena Rivera in the death of University of Iowa student Molly Tibbetts. That clears the path for Bahena Rivera to be sentenced August 30th for Tibbetts' murder. His lawyers had asked that he be granted a new trial, saying that new evidence pointed to new possible suspects. They said that Tibbetts' death might have been connected to alleged sex trafficking. Bahena Rivera faces life in prison without the possibility of parole. Also Wednesday, the Trib reported that someone had thrown a cat from a car in Boone County. But thanks to people traveling in the car behind, the injured cat was taken to the Iowa State University College of Veterinary Medicine in Ames, where it was stabilized. The Boone Area Humane Society took custody of the cat and put her in a foster home. The Trib also reported that a free speech organization has criticized Iowa State University's guidance on the new state law that bans the teaching of certain concepts in certain educational settings. The Foundation for Individual Rights in Education called on the university to clarify that students and faculty may speak freely about issues of race and gender. And the Trib reported on Iowa's sales tax free weekend, which runs today and tomorrow. Iowa's sales tax, which ranges from 6% to 7% depending on where you live, will be waived during this annual 2-day holiday. That means clothing and shoes and other items priced under $100 will be sales tax free. Yesterday's paper reported that 97 more cases of the coronavirus had been confirmed in Story County since last week. That brought the total number of cases in the county to 10,925 since the pandemic started. The county's 14-day positivity rate was 8.2%. The Trib also reported that fewer signatures would be required than had previously been announced for any petition that would seek a public vote on funding a new aquatic center in Ames. At its July 27th meeting, the council voted to move forward with $17.5 million in bonds for the project without a citywide vote. Now comes word that such a vote would become necessary if a petition receives 477 signatures of voters. That's 10% of the participation in the last general city election. Earlier, the city had said that more than 3,000 signatures would be required. City Manager Steve Shanker took the blame for that mistake. And the Trib reported that a public draft of the 2040 plan, which would guide the city's growth to the year 2040, would be released later this month. The city expects to have 15,000 new residents by 2040. That includes students at Iowa State University. And there was a story that members of the Ames Police Department and Fire Department, the Story County Sheriff's Office, and the Iowa State University Police Department had all stopped by a lemonade stand run by 2 9-year-old children in Ames this past Monday afternoon after some mean-spirited person had driven up and stolen the children's tip jar. The children's mom called the PD, and word got out to other first responders who dropped by to show their support for the kids. And by the way, all the proceeds they made that afternoon will be donated to Shop with a Cop, an annual holiday event where children and officers shop together at Target. And that is your summary of the week's news from the Ames Tribune. I'm Dennis Hart, happy to be back in Ames after a week on the road and ready for the upcoming weekend. But I'll come right back here on Monday at 7 on Local Talk when I'll report on what's been going on around Iowa. And there's been plenty of that. Between now and then, I hope you have a great weekend.
Thank you, Dennis Hart, for your Week in the News, and the music interlude was Big Blue Sky, Coyote Love. Recently, the Iowa Prairie Network hosted a virtual conference, and when I learned who would be welcoming the participants, I was glad to hear Sikawis Nobis's name. Sikawis is a Native woman, and it's always good to include a Native perspective while discussing our Native prairie legacy here in Iowa. And here's a woman of the environment from the Iowa City area, Sikawis Nobis. Welcome to Local Talk.
Hello.
And what is your nation, Sikawis?
I'm a Plains Cree Salto of the George Gordon First Nation, which is in Saskatchewan, Canada. And I grew up in Winnipeg, Manitoba, not too far from there. And I've been in Iowa City in particular, for 15 years.
And you were one of the key speakers at a recent Prairie conference. Is that right?
I was, yes. I spoke on Saturday virtually at the Iowa Prairie Conference.
Excellent. And I'm really anxious to learn more about your message there. But in your heart, Sakawis, why are prairies important to you?
Prairies are important to me because my people are plains people, and I grew up on the plains. And so, you know, they're important to me for a variety of reasons, you know, culturally, you know, traditionally, and then, you know, historically, because my ancestors, you know, are from these spaces. And so, you know, there's a lot of sacredness to, you know, what happens on the prairies and how we conduct ourselves and how we interact with, you know, different animals and landscapes. And so, you know, personally, that's what prairies mean to me. And also, prairies are particularly important to me because I've been living in Iowa for 15 years and I've grown very fond of this area of the world, but also very concerned about the state of Iowa's environment and its contribution to the climate crisis. Iowa is the most biologically transformed and or colonized state in the country, and it is the number one contributor to the dead zone in the Gulf of Mexico. And that's because colonial farming practices, which have turned into big ag or agribusiness, have moved into the state and essentially killed the land and the animals and the people in the process to make way for profit. And so where there used to be, you know, woodlands, transitioning from the woodlands at the Mississippi to oak savanna and wetlands into mostly tall grass prairie in Iowa, it's now just, you know, 90% monocropped GMO soy and corn fields and urban sprawl and CAFOs, which are concentrated animal feed operations, golf courses, roads, and other type of construction all over the state. Mm-hmm. And so we have some of the worst water quality in the country, and we are contributing greatly here in Iowa to the climate crisis. Farming is one of the most insidious practices that is but one of the most least talked about practices that are causing greenhouse gas emissions to go directly to our atmosphere and warm our climate.
And you mentioned something there pretty important, I think, was the Gulf of Mexico. Are you referring to that hypoxic zone where there's an absence of life? That's
yes.
And what and what's causing that? You kind of had a reference to, is it the fertilizer and herbicides?
All the things. It's all the things, yes. But yes, there's definitely high rates of nitrate going into these waters, as well as many other poisons and even antibiotics. There's fertilizers, there's that are, you know, obviously created from, in Iowa, a lot of pig waste, but then artificially created fertilizers. But then there's also herbicides, pesticides are also, you know, they use oil. They use oil to create it. They use petroleum products. Yeah, so the Gulf of Mexico is at the receiving end, if you will, of the Mississippi River, which is our biggest river in the U.S., and of course it's connected to the Missouri, and so a ridiculous amount of waste that is being collected as it starts at its headwaters and heads down to the Gulf, and Iowa is contributing greatly with pesticides, herbicides, fertilizers, animal waste, sorts of other chemicals, and including antibiotics. And what's happening is it's making the water unlivable down there. And so there's a 6,000 to 7,000 square kilometer, I believe, or mile area that really nothing can live.
So at the Prairie Conference, I'm sure the deep roots in our prairie heritage was pointed out when you were speaking with many of your peers. So the prairie, you feel, might be an antidote to some of these problems concerning soil erosion, soil loss, and
yes,
and the herbicides, pesticides, fertilizers.
Yeah. I do. We have extreme soil loss here in the state. It's believed that we have twice the amount of soil erosion going on than what the federal government is even estimating. And we have very little left. We have very few years left before it's really gone. And then what? And prairie, tall grass prairie, can have roots as deep as 8 feet. Mm-hmm. And within those roots and within all of that soil, it hosts a very large amount of carbon. 1 acre of pristine prairie can hold 5 tons of carbon. Imagine if we were able to restore, you know, millions of acres of prairie and what that would do to offset the carbon load that's in the air right now. I know we're talking about carbon credits and carbon capture farming and all of that. And a lot of people might think, well, if you just restore prairie, then like, what is the use of that, right? Like, what is it being used for in terms of its production for human beings? Well, it's being used to capture prairie and to bring back buffalo and all the other animals and birds and insects that need to be here for our well-being. But it's not like we can't afford the land, because the land that is currently being used is being used in the most inefficient way you can possibly imagine. Most of the corn that is grown here goes towards ethanol production and to feed animals. And the same can be said with the soy. It's being used as fillers in very overly produced foods. If we really look at the business of agriculture and how it is being done, it's probably the most lazy and inefficient way that you can farm, because it relies on the colonial capitalist model of profit, which basically tries to do the least amount for the most. And if we were to change that model and look at it differently, not from like a hierarchical perspective where, you know, the top people get the, you know, the ridiculous amounts of money and then everything trickles down. If we were to look at this differently, we might be able to save the environment here and the water and our health, you know, reduce cancer rates and help combat the climate crisis for the sake of everybody around the world.
I think there's a native teaching that everything we need is all, it is right here. You seem to be looking at some of the climate crisis dilemma, that prairie would be a good reaction or probable solution to a lot of these problems. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yes, it would. And we have to remember that prairie is not an end stage environment. It's always trying to move towards something else, like the woodlands. And so the reason it remained prairie for, you know, such a long time is because buffalo and indigenous peoples lived within these spaces and took care of these spaces. The buffalo would trample the grasses and eat the grasses, which made them hardier and thicker and their roots longer. And indigenous peoples would burn the prairie and move the buffalo, you know, so that they could, you know, keep things moving along and working in a harmonious way. I'm not saying that indigenous peoples and buffalo and what was going on was, you know, necessarily perfect, but I think it was as close to perfect as we can get in terms of living in a way that's more suited for everybody. And that's not to say we can't do that now. I know that things are very different with the way that we live, but it doesn't mean that we can't rematriate huge swaths of prairie throughout Iowa, which would allow for a lot of animals also to return, and it would greatly increase our biodiversity and the cleanliness of our waters.
All very good points to include. I am kind of curious about the times that you've spent in prairie. Do you have any particular special spots you go to or special plants that touch your heart?
I do. Of course, sage is important.
Oh, sage, one of the sacred plants. Yeah.
Yes, and sweetgrass and bergamot and so many more. You know, here in Iowa City, I go walking a lot at a small park. It's called I don't even know what it's called. I think it's called the Water Treatment Park. Uh-huh. It's where we have our water treatment plant here, and the whole area surrounding it is been it's rematriated prairie. And it's just got these beautiful paths through it. And it's my favorite place to go. I go there with my kids all the time. I also love to go to the Neil Smith Refuge and anywhere else in the state where I see prairie. Like, sometimes I just like to get out and be there just in these spaces. Like, and when I say anywhere else, like, really, I'll tell you a little story. Today I was bringing some stuff to Goodwill, and there's this lot that's behind Goodwill. It's like, it's in this very commercial space. Like, it's a lot that's never been developed in the city of Coralville, just next to Iowa City. And it's surrounded by Costco, Walgreens, Kohl's, Walmart. Like, it's just like surrounded by like huge corporate conglomerates, right? And so, but this one little, this area is always kind of in the middle of it. And every time I go there, and I don't go there often, I often look at it and I say, wow, they still haven't developed it. Mm-hmm. And it makes me happy because I see, you know, wild prairie there. Mm-hmm. And it just, like, it fills my heart.
Oh, what a great testimonial for the County Conservation Board of Johnson County, Larry Gullett and Brad Friedhoff, and quite an interesting group that leads your County Conservation Board there with a lot of prairie interests. So I think you're shining a light on some of their efforts. It sounds like these outdoor classrooms are very, very important to people like yourself with kids and families.
It is, but this isn't this is just a lot they haven't sold. It's been, you know, it's been there for sale for years. And I'm hoping it never sells. and actually, I'm a commissioner on the Iowa City Truth and Reconciliation Commission, and I'm helping with the subcommittee on sustainability. And you've just made me realize that I should probably, you know, bring this up at our next meeting.
Okay. Cutting edge stuff here. Well, is there anything else you've really kind of laid out a very good thesis on why prairies are important to you, why they should be important to Iowa, why they should be important to the world. Sikawis, thank you for your passion, but is there anything else?
Yeah, you know, if anybody would like to learn more, please go to Great Plains Action Society's website at greatplainsaction.org and check out our blog, and there's an article called End Stage Iowa, and you can even go to our zine link and download it in a zine form, and you can print it. It's something that I've worked on for a few years, and it has a lot more information about, you know, what we were just talking about, but it also gives indigenous perspectives on even on pigs and CAFOs. Pigs are not, they're not from here. They're not native to these lands, and they were carriers of disease. And now here they are being confined and tortured and killed in these terrible environments. And they're still spreading disease, you know, as we know, because of their waste in our water. And even from eating them, we can get sick, and because they're not treated properly. And so you can read more about that there. And also some of the ideas that we have, our little organization has, to try and change business as usual in Iowa.
Sikawis Nobis, what a pleasure it is including you on Local Talk. I'm glad all the prairie enthusiasts were, I'm sure your wisdom in your presentation was very heartfelt and affected a lot of people. It gives a lot of encouragement on, let's just get back to some basics and take better care of the planet.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
You have been listening to Sikawis Nobis on her thoughts pertaining to native prairie in Iowa. This is KHOI's Local Talk, and let's have some natural music by Big Blue Sky.
making circles in the sand, making music in the grassy slough. Listen to the sound, universal roars, the wind pound against the shore. There's a flock coming down out of the sky, they're winnowing in the wind. Trees try to argue with the breeze, but you know they're gonna bend. Music in the wind. Music in the wind. Music in the wind. Music in the wind. Cold and gray, November sky. Hang out on the river. Wonder why that restless gale stirs your restless soul. It's got you roving into the wind. The autumn clouds hold the seeds of change, so you're following a path, secret lane. Primal calls, a thousand swans in a transitory swirl. It's music in the wind. Music in the wind. Music in the wind. Music in the wind. One winter morning, where the snow is fresh and bright, follow the tracks of the coyotes, past there in the night, could see where they danced and slid across the ice, and then they rolled over on their backs. One went east, one went west, and disappeared into the waving grass. Music in the wind. Music in the wind. Music in the wind. Music in the wind. And you can walk through these woods on a fine spring day, soak up that early shade of green. Bird songs fill the air, it's the music of the forest and the stream. Secrets of the earth stored in those songs, if we only take the time to hear. Balance in the forest, wisdom in the song, yeah, music in the beauty of the wind. Music in the wind. Music in the wind. Music in the wind. Music in the wind. And what do the footprints of our lives look like scattered in the snow and the sand? Can we walk together, stay connected to this land? Can we take songs of the earth floating in the wind and the sun? Can we take the songs we hear, sing them back to the earth again? Music in the wind. Music in the wind. Music in the wind. Music in the wind. Thank you. the wind. Music in the wind. Music in the wind. Music in the wind. You know it's music in the wind.
This is KHOI, Community Radio's Local Talk, and I'm Pat Schlarbaum, today with our studio engineer extraordinaire, Mike Murphy. So let's welcome Susan Gwiazda, Public Relations Officer for the City of Ames. And Susan always includes great guests. So hi, Susan.
Hello, Pat. It's good to see you.
It's good to see you. It's good to have another week. And it's been a lot of activity at the Rummage Rampage. And I see you've
Yes, I brought Bill Schmidt with me today because Bill has been there every single day this week, watching and monitoring the sale and helping out. And he and Mary Rankin are the event organizers. We've had a super successful week. It's not quite done, but I thought Bill could bring in just an update of where we are and how we feel the week is going to play out.
Yeah, this Rummage Rampage, people are taking their no longer used anything in the household. It used to be the streets were lined with things as people were moving in transition, and somebody, the light went on, and I think it's this man that we're going to introduce next, Bill Schmidt, the Resource Recovery Superintendent. And let's talk about how it's turning out this year, Bill.
Good morning, Pat. It's been going extremely well. We've had fantastic volunteers. Some of your staff and members from KHOI have been down to help. We've had 28 different nonprofit agencies that are volunteering help throughout the event. The event started just a week ago. It almost seems like a month ago the way it's been going. But it was just a week ago that we started receiving items on Friday, July 30th. We received more items in that one day than we ever have before. Oh. We filled up the entire lower level of the intermodal facility and went around the corner. We had such a selection of items for people to shop that first day on Saturday, July 31st. I felt we could have rivaled just about any furniture store or department store with all the different items we had. But it's been going extremely well. We've had great support from the community. We're still receiving items, taking donations today, and selling items today from noon to 6. Tomorrow, our last day, we're not accepting donations, but we are doing sales, and we'll do that from 8 to noon tomorrow. Tomorrow, we'll start off at half price the ticket price. And then every hour we'll probably do some more bargains, because our goal is really to find homes for these items. As you so nicely stated, these are usable items that people no longer need. But rather than just throwing them in the garbage where they would end up in the landfill, we're finding a new home for them. We're utilizing the full life of that item. And to me, it just brings me so much joy to see people finding something that they need, something that they can utilize. You've got some people that maybe you're having some tough times and they can really find some really good usable items. Mm-hmm. I had a lady the other day that she had a set of chairs. She had 5 chairs. She used to have 6. One broke. She couldn't get it fixed. And she found the exact chair that she needed to make her set of 6. So it came in as a set of 3. So, you know, we didn't feel bad at all about breaking that up, because then that left 2 good chairs for somebody to put with a table. It's just so neat. We've had almost 100 couches come in so far already. So many of those have found good homes already. I really enjoy the atmosphere down there. As I say, we've got such wonderful volunteers. And I really encourage people that even if it's next week and you find some items that you no longer need, if you've got some space in the basement or some room in the garage, I'm a little bit of a hoarder myself, but you can certainly hold on to those items and donate them next year, because we've exceeded the amount that we've raised in 2019 already. And all that money goes back to the nonprofits, which is just so exciting that we're able to help them with their missions that they're doing in support of the community. And it's nice to be a part of that.
Yeah, absolutely is. So there's a couple key points I'd like to emphasize for people. The destination is over on Sheldon. Is it like 124?
You can come off Sheldon, or you can come in off 129 Hayward, correct?
Off Hayward also. So it's the intermodal transportation center.
Correct. Yes.
And just south of Iowa State University. Mm-hmm. And today's a good day to go ahead and bring more items. Tomorrow's going to be a good day, it sounds like, for shopping for bargains.
Certainly is, yes.
And recognizing some of the key people like Susan Gwiazda and Mary Rankin and Lynn Carey here with our radio station and other volunteers.
Yep, we've seen her.
When you mentioned the 28 different nonprofits that are benefiting from this, but for me, it's also the fact that stuff is not being landfilled, which mm-hmm. it always people just didn't have any other recourse. And now they do. So how much tonnage? Do you have any of those figures from 2019 and how?
Sure. Yeah, we don't have this year's numbers pulled together yet. But in 2019, we were able to divert over 116,000 pounds or find home for 116,000 pounds of items. I was just going through and adding all up, and we're well over 300,000 pounds since the life of the event that we've been able to divert. Find new homes for and keep out of landfill, which is just fantastic.
So 60 tons, just from 2019, and you seem to be exceeding that now. Repurposing, recycling. I know you're in the business of making sure that things go through your system there at the recovery plant, but boy, it's got to be redeeming to know that good items are going to just be recycled and repurposed.
Yes, and we certainly hope this kind of gets people to think about that in their own lifestyles, not just during Rummage Rampage, but throughout the entire year. Do I really need this item? If I get this item, is it something that I can use for a period of time and it's not just a single-use, throwaway type of item? Mm-hmm. And if I no longer need something, where can I give it or who can I get that item to for someone that can utilize it? Mm-hmm. A lot of time, energy, and effort went into manufacturing, shipping those items, and we want to make sure that they get used.
Yeah, absolutely. Are there things that you're not encouraging people to bring?
We're not encouraging people to bring mattresses, snow tires, household hazardous chemicals. You can give us a call. We'll take those items here at the Resource Recovery Plant. They can give us a call at 239-5137, and we'll help with those items. But we'll certainly take the normal household kitchenware items, the plates, dishes, cups, the silverware, garage items, exercise items, furniture, even some rare and unique items. We've seen some pretty interesting things come through over the years. So,
mm-hmm.
I would say that we're pretty well stocked in holiday decor. So you might want to save your holiday decor for a friend or somebody else that wants it, because our seasonal area really is still pretty full, and it's hard for people to get excited about Christmas. At this point in time. So we always wonder how that stuff is going to play out at the end. And it still looks pretty full. So if you want a Christmas bargain or Halloween, lots of great Halloween decorations. If you have a place to store it, you could really get some good buys.
Oh, you can trade in. Yeah, you can have a different, somebody else's display.
True.
Yeah, take yours in and get somebody else's. That's great. Once again, thank you enough for being innovative and creative and having the vision to say, we're picking up too much good stuff. And when did Rummage Rampage get going?
The first year of it was in 2016.
16,
It's and only that year we diverted 44,000 pounds and raised $5,000.
Uh-huh. But that was the start. And
really, really grown. It's amazing how fast the community has embraced this.
Yeah. Thank you very much for having this option available. Is there anything else, Bill or Susan?
I just really want to thank the community for supporting the event. Volunteers have been fantastic, wonderful. We can't do it without those volunteers. And as I say, if you have some items, today's your last chance. Get it down there between noon and 6. And we'll find a new home for it. And we work extremely hard for anything that's left over. We'll give it back or allow the volunteer agencies to take anything that they can utilize in their missions. We then work mm-hmm. with the thrift stores around town for items that they will take. Anything else that's left, we'll recycle the steel, the glass. We work with florist stores to take the used vases. So, yeah, we try and find homes for as much stuff as we can.
Mm-hmm. Well, what a great program. Thank you so very much. Susan Guiasta, Public Relations Officer for the City of Ames, and Bill Schmidt, Resource Recovery Superintendent Extraordinaire. Thank you so much. Have a good weekend. Let's take a music break with more local talk to come. You're listening to Local Talk on KHOY Community Radio, and I'm your host, Pat Schlarbaum, with engineer Mike Murphy. And let's welcome from ISU Extension Outreach, Mary Wilkins. Hi, Mary.
Good morning.
Hi.
Good morning.
Great to have you with us. I have some specific questions for you later on, but I thought you might go ahead and share with us all the good things that ISU Extension is involved with this month of August.
Sure. Thank you. Yes, August is a busy month. We are wrapping up our youth program year. So September will be the start of our new program where youth may choose to enroll as a 4-H member or a Clover Kid member. And so we'll be getting some things in place to get that kicked off. One of our 4-H clubs, Team Neutrino, is going to be joining me at the end of August when we are at the Ames Main Street Farmers Market. And so you'll have an opportunity to interact and meet with them and see some of the amazing things that they do with their robot for events and competition. We also support family education and nutrition education. And so starting on Tuesday, we have a Plan Shop Save Cook program. And that is something I have teamed up with my colleague, Stephanie Daniels. She provides the nutrition education for the adults. And while the adults are with her, then I provide programming for their children. And so it's an evening where the family can come together and all have an opportunity to explore nutrition, explore how to save dollars at the grocery store, exploring food choices, and even making some meals together in the process. That program will be on Tuesdays, beginning August 10th at 6 p.m. It's here at our office, and it's a 4-week series. So we'll meet for 4 weeks and then have another opportunity available after that. Stephanie does a variety of nutrition education for adults, whether it's in a group setting or a scenario where it's an individual visit, whether it's to our office or at another location. So it's great to have her in that program available through our office as well.
And what's your address there where this is going to be kicking off August 10th?
Sure. Our address is 1421 South Bell Avenue, and we're Suite 107. And we're here in Ames.
So you're kind of far southeast corner of Ames, out out near New 30 and the interstate on the west side of the interstate. Yeah.
We are on the west side of the interstate. Mm-hmm. So DMAC, the DMAC Hunziker Center, is across the street from us.
Yeah, 1421 South Bell. What a destination for all the good things that you're providing the community.
Absolutely. So we have those things happening. We have some youth programs that we will be wrapping up this month as well. Mm-hmm. On Monday, August 9th, we have our Babysitting Basics program. This is an opportunity for youth fifth grade and up to really hone in and develop those skills as a babysitter and explore how they might get started as a babysitter. This particular program, this offering is going to be held in Colo. So knowing that as Extension, we serve the entire county, mm-hmm. this program will be over at the Colo Community Center from 10:30 to 5. And so all of these programs will have a registration. Not all programs have a fee. This particular one does, but there is, I believe I have one spot left. So there could be that potential that we could take a last minute registration as well.
Mm-hmm. Or think about it for next year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. As we get started with our new program year, we are identifying what programs we will be offering when, and certainly Babysitting Basics is one of those signature programs mm-hmm. that we will look and plan for again in the coming months.
Mm-hmm. Sure. How many participants do you normally have in your registration for these classes?
Sure. So registration and participation numbers may vary depending on the program, but often for youth programs, the programs that myself and my colleague Jess do, those typically will have about 10 youth so that we're matching our ratio and having enough adults to support the number of youth right. in our program as well.
Sure, sure. Well, that's always good to know. And before we leave, there must be a website that people can learn more about the different classes that you're offering. Let's go ahead and include it now, and then I'll tack it on at the end also, and then on our website.
Wonderful. Thank you. Yes, our website is www.extension.iastate.edu/story.
And Story is referring to Story County?
Yes, Story yeah. County. So Story. Mm-hmm. And that will take anyone to our County Extension homepage. And all of our program opportunities and mm-hmm. offerings are also listed and available there as well. Mm-hmm.
Well, and I know you do extensive outreach on homemaking, if you will. And I had a question that I got involved with last year with elderberries. I live on an acreage where when I moved there, there was one elderberry in 1992. And as we made a little frog pond, I remember ensuring that the farmer didn't take out my elderberry. And since that time, the birds have done me a big, big favor, and I have elderberries everywhere. And finally, the light went on. I thought, well, this is a purple fruit. There's probably good immune qualities for my immune system. And the more I read about it, I said, oh, absolutely. So last year, I did a canning exercise. And I think, is ISU Extension a good source for that type of education on how to use a pressure cooker or how to can elderberries?
Yes. So we have, in addition to county staff, we have specialists that serve more than one county. And so we have a nutrition and wellness specialist, Holly Van Heel, and she really has a wealth of information to share when it comes to canning, preparing those foods, as well as the nutritional value of those foods. Mm-hmm. We often get those scheduled. We have a salsa making workshop, for example, scheduled for September 25th with Holly. So that's just one example of the types of things that we work with her to provide within the county. Mm-hmm. Again, she has that wonderful information. From a county level, we can also provide canner testing. So there's an opportunity for folks to bring in their lid and their dial gauge, and we can help measure and make sure it's within the working parameters and guidelines of canning. And so we're able to support that experience as well.
Yeah, super. What's your telephone number?
Our phone number is 515-337-1601.
Okay, 337-1601. And so if I call that number and I would ask for the nutrition specialist, and did you say her name was Holly?
Her name is Holly. So as a specialist, they may be housed in another county extension office. So our office, for example, we house an agronomist. But Megan, who is our agronomist, her office is here, but she serves multiple counties. Mm-hmm. So Holly's office is in another county. So what we often do, we'll take a message or find a way to connect our caller directly with Holly as well.
Yeah. So you got the network all set up for helping out people like myself that want to learn more, want to do it right. And there's a lot of information on the internet, but I think it kind of bolsters your outreach into the community when you can help somebody that
absolutely
needs a helping hand.
Yes. And that's really our role is to provide that information so families can make choices and forward that works best for them.
Well, as a community radio station, we certainly appreciate your involvement and really want to thank you for the opportunity to learn more about ISU Extension. And thank you so much, Mary Wilkins.
Thank you.
Yeah. You have been listening to Local Talk. It airs at 7 a.m. and 5 p.m. on Fridays at 89.1 FM. So tell your friends far and wide, KHOI is streaming live at khoifm.org and hit the play button. And please remember to support this station financially when you go to the website khoifm.org and find that yellow donate button. KHOI provides a platform for citizens and public officials to air their opinions and information. The views of our guests do not necessarily reflect those of KHOI. KHOI is community, nonprofit, nonpartisan media. Thank you, Local Talk producers Ursula Rudenberg and Lynn Carey. And thank you, Dennis Hart, with your Friday report. Thank you, engineer Mike Murphy. And thanks to our guests, Sikawis Nobis, Susan Guiazda, Bill Schmidt, and Mary Wilkins. And I have been your host for this hour, Pat Schlarbaum. Our theme song, as always, is Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other artists you heard was Big Blue Sky, Music in the Wind. So stay tuned for headline news and Democracy Now! Remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOY meaningful and possible. You are the community in community radio, so thank you for listening, and see you again on the radio.